Welcome to Still Scared Talking Children's Horror, a podcast about creepy, spooky, and disturbing children's books, films, and TV. I'm Ren Wednesday, my co-host is Adam Wybrow, and today we're talking about the film Casper from 1995, directed by Brad Silberling. A full transcript of this episode will be available, so check the show notes for that. Enjoy! Good evening, Adam.
Good evening, Ren. It's been a few weeks. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm being a bit pummeled by the darkness in a literal sense. Now that the clocks have changed and there isn't much daylight, and it gets me every year. But I'm sitting here right now in front of my big light box, so
okay,
while
good.
We podcast, and
presumably emotionally and psychologically, not physically pummeled by the darkness. Saying in a literal sense, I was imagining that some kind of spooktacular black caped embodiment of the darkness was giving you a pinch punch first of the month or something.
Yeah, no, it's not quite that. Not quite that literal. Yeah.
Okay.
And how are you, Adam?
I'm all right. Teaching's, as I related before we started recording, teaching's been quite exhausting recently. I've got a bit cross with the kids, which I don't feel great about. I mean, they just laugh, so you know, I don't think they've been particularly traumatised by it. To be fair, but. Nonetheless, I like to be a genial teacher. Animation club's going well, though. I showed Moomins, Moomins the other day. It was the episode of the cartoon where Moomin falls in love with a ship's figurehead because it's a beautiful woman. And yeah, and Snork Maiden's really jealous and so takes it out to sea with Sniff to drown it. And then Hobgoblin visits, who's been journeying for like 200 years to retrieve some gem that Thingamy and Bob. Is that what they called? Thingamy and Bob? The little trickster.
Yeah, I think so. Which
squeaky,
one's Hobgoblin?
Squeaky voiced. Well, it's just an interstellar Hobgoblin.
Oh, okay.
It looks like he's flown in from Sailor Moon, to be honest, who comes in and asks for his gem back and. Moomin Mama basically says, "Well, no, it's not yours anymore. It's theirs." And he's like, "Oh, I've searched for 200 years. That's very disappointing." And then they say, "Oh, I hope you do. You want some tea?" And he says, "Yes, that would be nice." And he has tea with the Moomins.
Yeah.
But
so a less horrific episode than some.
It was not a children's horror episode, actually. Man. And the kids who weren't playing games on their phones seemed to enjoy it. So that was nice. and today we're talking about a film from my childhood, the live-action Casper from 1995, which I had wrongly assumed would also be a film from your childhood. But
yeah,
wasn't.
I mean, that was a reasonable assumption. It was 1995, so it came out at the right time for me to have watched it. But for some reason, I didn't. It just passed me by. So watching it for this episode was the first time I'd seen it, which is probably quite to its detriment, because... without the kind of sheen of nostalgia, it's not great.
So this is quite a cozy watch for me. I probably did enjoy it quite a lot more than you. Yeah. Although I will note that it's not the first film directed by Brad Silberling that we've both reviewed.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I looked at his Wikipedia page, and a few years after this, he directed City of Angels, the Nicolas Cage vehicle from 1998, which I hope you remember we reviewed for our old blog, Cage Wisdom.
Yeah, I don't know if we've ever mentioned that on the podcast, that we used to have this blog up there. Of reviewing Nicolas Cage films. Yeah.
So if anyone really, really enjoys our patter and wants more of our stuff, you can. It is still online. If you look up like Cage Wisdom, Nick Cage WordPress, you can find our old Nicolas Cage blog, where we ambitiously tried to review every Cage film, but then he went into a kind of slump in the 2010s when he was just making vigilante films, and I think we both lost interest.
Yeah, you kept interest a bit longer than I did, but.
But
we did talk about some bad movies.
Well, the one you watched that I never did was that Boy in Blue film about the invention of the rowing machine.
No, is it the invention of the sliding seat?
So is it more specific than the rowing machine?
Yeah, more specific than the rowing machine on actual rowing, but it was the invention of the seat that slides back and forward to facilitate your rowing, which, as you will agree, I'm sure, is a historical moment ripe for commemoration in film.
I mean, Cage is back on top, though. I don't know if you've gone to the cinema to see a Dream Scenario.
No, but he was also in, wasn't he in Dracula?
Oh, Renfield, yeah. He played Dracula in Renfield. So, you know, his career is... He's definitely out of the straight-to-DVD action... grey turquoise action film thing that he was stuck in for a while. So that's nice. this is a film directed by Brad Silberling. And it is the first film, according to Wikipedia at least... to star a CGI character in the lead role. Casper gets rather more to do than Jar Jar Binks ever did.
He's there.
I don't think you're necessarily appreciating how historic this film is. So it's produced by Universal. It's quite unsurprisingly a Steven Spielberg executive produced film. So Spielberg.
I need to put this in context. The context of mixed real life and animation. You know, 1995. That's quite a long time ago.
I mean, it's not quite Who Framed Roger Rabbit. In terms of, look at that spectacle, I will admit. you know, it's pretty well integrated. I don't think so. Our, I guess, lead performers, in terms of the flesh actors, the flesh bags, are Christina Ricci and Bill Pullman. And both of them would have had to have done quite a lot of acting to mannequins or... faces drawn on paper plates or whatever, and you know, I think they both do a pretty fine job.
They both were good. I'm always glad to see Christina Ricci. Obviously to me, I've been watching Yellow Jackets when that's been out recently, and she's amazing in that. So always.
And this would have been just off the back of Adam's Family.
Yeah.
So it would make sense to cast her in... You know, I mean, this film is interesting as to whether it's a horror film or not, because Casper obviously was already a character, you know, from the cartoon, Casper the Friendly Ghost. And in the cartoon... And the comics, does he belong to the Archie universe? Because they have a kind of Archie
Yeah, I think it's like Harvey Comics. I don't know.
Yeah,
who that is.
And Woody Woodpecker as well, I think.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, but, I think I think you're right. That is the same family.
But he's certainly
Richie Rich. That's right, because Casper.
Oh, Richie Rich.
Casper is like the dead version of Richie Rich. Yeah.
Oh, but he's not though. Well, because in the film he kind of is, because I think in the comic he's just he was born a ghost. You know, he was always a ghost.
Oh, okay, all right.
Yeah, this is my understanding: is that in the comic,
born a ghost.
You know, he's of the species of ghost.
Okay.
So. Yeah. You know, he doesn't have the kind of melancholia because he was never a human boy.
Right.
You know, being a ghost is his daily life. It's his bread and butter. Whereas in the film, he is the ghost of a dead rich child.
Yeah. And it's just like Ghost Pinocchio is the plot of this film.
Yes, I suppose it is. Or maybe closer to Ghost AI. With the kind of increased uncanny charge that the film has. So he's Casper the Friendly Ghost. Obviously the film gets some goofy mileage out of the fact that he's Casper the inadvertently terrifying ghost. Mm-hmm, so the film begins with two prepubescent lads exploring this seemingly abandoned mansion. And I will say that the set design and the art direction of this film. Yeah, it's pretty, it's got that going for it.
Yeah, it does. Like I did really enjoy the effort they put into the set design of the Haunted Mansion. It's a sort of Gaudi like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tim Burton does Gaudi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know that was good.
You know, lovely stained glass, sort of weird little freaky toothed fish creature at the bottom of the banister.
Oh yeah, that was one of my, I didn't make very many notes for this film, but one of them is fish banister, so yeah. yeah, it was a good banister.
Great banister. But Casper spends his time, I don't know, mooning about the mansion, I guess, and acting as a servant to his three uncles, Stinky, Stretchy, and Fatso, I believe.
Yeah,
they're simply defined characters, I think it's fair to say. And it starts with these two boys going in and seeing Casper and being terrified. But Casper, of course, is the inadvertently terrifying ghost. He only wants to be friends. And then we're sort of introduced to, I guess, the antagonist of the film.
Yeah. Carrigan, played by Kathy Moriarty, which is an appropriate name for an antagonist. And her sidekick, Dibs, played by Eric Idle, which, you know, we can come back to Eric Idle.
We'll come back to Eric Idle.
she's being read her father's will, by a lawyer and sort of, you know, being very callous and demanding, I think is the vibe. Demanding, you know, what did he leave her? And it turns out all he's left her is this manor house.
She goes to visit it and discovers quite quickly that it is in fact haunted by Casper and his extended family. We get a very short montage of them trying to use exorcists to dispel the ghosts.
Oh yeah, that was very perfunctory. Yeah, they have an exorcist reference, they have a Ghostbusters reference, right?
Is it Dan Aykroyd? I think one of the actual Ghostbusters.
Is that okay?
Gets his paycheck for quickly appearing and donning his costume and then walking off.
I don't even know if it was. <I don't know.
laughs> I mean, I can't imagine that anyone in Hollywood had a career as a Dan Aykroyd impersonator, but I suppose it's possible. But anyway, she then... So Casper, this is a bit of sort of unnecessary plot device and makes Casper even creepier than he needs to be, but not in a good way. Right, is watching TV and watches a kind of infant, well, I don't know if it's an infomercial or a kind of one of those news broadcasts.
Local news.
Local news. A kind of kooky local news story about a ghost psychiatrist. And Casper takes a shine, I guess, to the guy's teenage daughter, and hatches very quickly a plan to lure her to his house.
Yeah, he does. Yeah,
But by means of transporting himself through an electricity pylon, so. This is he's not housebound, right? He can travel the globe through electricity and transport himself. So I don't know why he's spending all his time with his horrible uncles moping around this house when he can travel anywhere at the speed of electricity, but fine, okay.
Yeah, it does seem like an unnecessary plot hole to introduce into your film, but sure.
I mean, he doesn't use this power. It seems like quite an incredible power that Casper doesn't really utilise very much, apart from to lure a 13-year-old girl to his house. But okay. Which is what he does. He basically engineers it so Carrigan sees the television broadcast of the psychiatrist and his daughter, and thus... gets hold of him to go and perform this exorcism on the ghosts. So Casper then gets this girl moving in to his bedroom, as it happens.
Yeah.
I imagine that you weren't particularly a Casper stan watching this film.
No.
You didn't find him charming, little Casper?
I didn't find him charming.
Bulbous head.
It's very bulbous. I didn't really like how he looked. I think. Sorry.
What didn't he like about how he looked? Something fetal, marshmallowy.
Oh, it is. It does look quite fetal. Yeah, you're right. Maybe that's it. Just very squishy. A very squishy, translucent, like, boy, but I mean, not very person-like, I think.
I mean, is he a boy? Is he a pet? Is he an infant? Is he a 100-something-year-old being?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think this is why the film is trying to situate Casper as a adolescent with appropriate adolescent romantic feelings. And I just wasn't getting that feeling from the creature that was presented to me on the screen, right? I didn't feel like, yes, this I can recognise as... You know,
as a romantic prospect.
Yeah, no, he's too weird looking. Like, I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, clearly,
and he's also quite baby looking. And I think those two things just make it quite for me.
I think that's fair, and it does feel a bit like a kind of weird anime or visual plot come to life. Like, oh, this girl happens to have moved into my room. She doesn't know I'm there because I'm a ghost. Oh, no, she's accidentally using me as her pillow.
Yeah, I mean, that was a bit...
I mean, that's... You know, I don't know if that could be texture of the week, the idea of using Casper. Because what would he be like as a pillow? Like, is he gelatinous?
is he gelatinous? Yeah. I mean,
is he soft inside or is he kind of squirmy?
I'm actually, speaking of this, I had a really good dessert recently, like the other day at a Malaysian cafe.
Oh, yeah.
And it was so good. It was like a bowl of textures, right?
Ooh.
It had this kind of squishy, like, taro that was kind of like mochi. And then it had, like, two types of tapioca. Like, it had the small sago tapioca and, like, the larger tapioca pearls, like you get in bubble tea. Mm-hmm. And then it had grass jelly. And then it was all, like, swimming in coconut milk. And it was just, this amazing bowl of shapes and textures and colours.
And you think Casper's made of that?
I mean, I can imagine him having a mochi-like consistency, I think.
Yeah! Yeah, a little mochi boy. I can totally imagine him having a mochi-like consistency.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't even need to sing Texture of the Week. Did you hear my AI? Look, I've got AI to do my work for me.
What?
I sent you the song. We're living in the future. Like, computers can just sing about textures. You can make them do that now.
Oh, I missed that.
It's like a folk song.
Okay. Now,
like, here, textures everywhere. I'll just play that.
Okay.
Well, I woke up this morning with a skip in my step. The birds were singing and the sun was shining so bright. I took a stroll down the road feeling so free. Little did I know chaos was waiting for me. Texture.
There we go. When you listen to the episode in full, you would have just heard it.
Oh, amazing. Wow. Okay.
So yeah. Thanks.
Great.
Yeah. It's almost like Simon and Garfunkel are back together. but okay. So is your texture Casper or is it something else?
Oh, I think maybe my texture is Casper. Maybe it's specifically when he's trying to describe what he's made of. And he says, you know that tingly feeling when your foot falls asleep? I think I'm made of that.
That's quite whimsical.
It is quite whimsical, yeah. I thought that was quite appropriate. My runner-up is Fish Bannister.
Oh, I knew you'd like the Fish Bannister. I mean, in terms of Casper textures, my favourite bit is later in the film, he's got some kind of telepod-like machine. Imagine the teleporter that Jeff Brundle uses in The Fly, but more steampunk, to try to bring him back to life. And he gets interrupted halfway and he becomes a big Casper egg.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he does, doesn't he?
Yeah, like big drippy Casper egg.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that thing is quite like The Fly, isn't it?
That was quite good. But my texture of the week is Eric Idle's laugh lines.
on his face?
Yeah, on his face. Because from all his smiling over the years, he's got these wonderful laugh lines. Wonderful crow's feet at the sides of his eyes. I know that Graham Chapman was always your favourite Python, but you must have had a lot of fondness for Eric Idle when you were young, because I know you liked the Ruttles a lot.
I did like the Ruttles a lot. And also when I was younger, like before my Python era, I really loved the Wind in the Willows. Which is probably one of the things that had the most full cast of Pythons post-Python. Like, it had... Eric Idle was Ratty, Terry Jones was Toad. Michael Palin just, like, had a cameo. He was, like, the son. And John Cleese was in there somewhere.
Badger, possibly?
No. I think John Cleese was, like, a lawyer or something. But
okay, yeah.
But I really loved that film as a kid.
Which would have been in production around the same time as Casper, maybe a year afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to be rather meaner about Eric Idle, because I think he did go on somewhat in the 90s, had a kind of quite prolific stage of just being a massive sellout and just like being in literally anything. He's in so many bad movies from this time. Just playing like the kooky Englishman kind of thing. That was very much his niche for a little while there.
He's sort of doing his glad handling, obsequious type character here, I'd say.
Yeah.
That he does a lot in Python.
Yeah. That's true. He did have quite a line in kind of oily characters.
So a Uriah Heep type character.
Hmm.
Which, you know, I think works. I remember as a kid being disturbed by the amount of abuse he gets in this film. I do vaguely remember as a kid feeling quite sorry for him, not really understanding what his relationship was with Carrigan. Because I think he's her solicitor or something, but there's possibly a romantic thing going on as well.
It's quite
undefined, which I just remember as a kid not really being able to work out what their relationship was and feeling that she treated him very badly and feeling quite sorry for him, basically.
Yeah, yeah. He does get on the wrong end of the slapstick quite a lot.
Yeah. And I also remember finding the ghostly trio fairly scary, actually, which is interesting because, as an adult, you know, they're just used for gross out humour, really, these three ghosts. But I actually did find them quite intimidating. They're pretty chaotic, and it's very hard to tell how evil they are, like, you know, to what degree they're murderous, to what degree they're just jokers, and to what degree they're genuinely dangerous. It's quite unclear.
Yeah. I struggled with those characters. I was just like, oh my god, they're very obnoxious.
So basically, they're Casper's three uncles, and they're not too pleased with Bill Pullman and Christina Ricci moving in to their abode.
Yeah. So that's kind of the conflict of the rest of the film is them versus Bill Pullman and for rule of the house, really. There's various kind of attempts to strike a bargain with them, that Bill Pullman's character says he'll leave them alone and like call off Carrigan if they can let him speak to his dead wife, kind of thing.
I mean, there's a fair amount of sentimentality in this film. It's sort of gestured towards. I do remember finding the music quite evocative as a kid, the kind of music box style melody that plays when Casper's talking about how he died came back to me when watching the film. And I do remember finding that music very sad as a kid when I watched the film. But I feel like the kind of theme of... it's maybe a little bit too bashful about the theme of death. Especially if you compare this to Beetlejuice, and is obviously being released in the wake of Beetlejuice, I would say, this film.
Yeah, Beetlejuice, which we subtitled The Ghosts Who Were Nice, so...
but I think Beetlejuice, while possibly less appropriate for kids in parts of it, is certainly a much more successful film. Partly because it's just a lot more dynamic, And the character of Beetlejuice introduces another element of conflict outside of just the getting the ghosts out of the house. But also, it's more sober and clear-eyed about the topic of death and approaches it in a more interesting way, whereas I feel like Casper's quite cliched and sentimental about death and doesn't really explore it particularly.
Yeah. And also, yeah, I think this is like I was saying with Casper, none of the ghosts really feel... They feel like they are of the species ghost. They were born a ghost.
Mm.
Never really thought... They don't really feel any connection to them as having been former living human beings.
Although you say that, but obviously what happens in the plot, weirdly, is that Carrigan is partly interested in the mansion because she believes that there's some treasure buried there, basically. And
yeah.
So, you know, she's very money-driven. And so then has... wants... Okay, so... There's a machine that Casper's father was working on to bring Casper back, which can bring ghosts back to life. And basically, Carrigan discovers this, and so has the plot that she will kill Eric Idle's character. Then, as a ghost, he will be able to float his way into the safe or the vault, bring out whatever the treasure is, and then be brought back to life.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is about as convoluted as a 90s adventure game puzzle.
Yeah. Right, you have to kill the lackey.
But actually, she ends up... She tries to run him over, basically. There's a series of... Eric Idle is almost murderously killed. And then she tries to run him down in her car and ends up parked at the edge of a cliff, opening the door and plummeting to her death.
Yeah.
So then
she comes back as a ghost. Yeah.
As a giant ghost, no less.
Yeah.
Very large. I don't know why. Like she has so much ambitious evil energy that she's really big.
Mm-hmm.
I guess.
Yeah. And then she floats through the safe door to get the treasure. I should have written this down because I watched this like 2 days ago and I already can't remember what happened.
Well, okay, well what happens is that the treasure turns out to just be some old stupid baseball glove that Casper likes.
Oh yeah, okay. It's just a
and
sentimental
like,
treasure.
Exactly. Casper's like, see, that's what the treasure is.
That's the real
baseball
treasure.
That's the real treasure, my baseball glove. Oh, I'm an all-American boy.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
The thing I did like was using the little Hoover, the little dustbuster as a weapon against the ghosts. I thought that was
That's pretty neat.
Mackie does that with flies.
Is it in a business like way, or does she make a game of it?
No, very business like. Yeah.
Okay, that's good. That has a certain decorum, I think. Good.
Yeah. But yeah, so Casper is the one who gets turned back into a human boy.
No, he doesn't. No, he doesn't. That's like Cinderella. No, you can't. That's a completely
what?
Different ending. That doesn't happen.
What?
But no. No, because Bill Pullman accidentally dies by stepping into like an open drain or something, like a construction site. He becomes a ghost. Casper's going to be turned. It's like you didn't even pay attention to this film at all, Ren. And then Casper selflessly sacrifices his own potential life for Bill Pullman to be brought back to life. But because of this sacrifice, the good witch, or the good ghost of Christina Ricci's dead mother, grants Casper the magical wish of being a boy until not midnight, but 10 o'clock, because midnight would be too late for a 12-year-old.
Yeah, okay, thank you, Adam. Yeah, I wasn't really into this film, I'm sorry.
And then nice guy Casper gets to have a dance with Christina Ricci.
Yeah, and he has this weird creepy little catchphrase where he's like to her, "Can I keep you?"
He whispers it, and he also, he very cleverly, what a clever little ghost, he kind of says it while she's falling asleep, so she doesn't really understand what she's committing herself to. It's clever ghost tricks. He's like, "Can I keep you?" And she's like, I'm just falling asleep. Yes, yes, Casper. And he's like, "Ah, ha, ha! The contract is sealed. Mine forever, human."
Yeah.
He's a bit of a little creep, isn't he?
But I mean, he does, stretching the bounds of imagination, he does turn back into a normal looking human boy, rather than a mochi creep.
Well, you say a normal looking human boy, but actually, since you mentioned it, he does look quite a lot like Richie Rich.
Well, yeah.
So I think this theory is canon. I think he turns back into Richie Rich.
Is this a Simpsons bit or something? I feel like Casper and Richie Rich being the same.
Oh, maybe it is. It does seem like it's something that might happen. And there's also another kind of weird, creepy bit, because like they have a little kiss at the end of the dance, and then like before she knows it, he's transformed and her face is like inside his face.
Like
because they're leaning forward and then like she sort of led into him. I don't know, that freaked me. I didn't like that. I thought it was horrid.
I'm sorry for my pretty lackluster approach to this episode.
Well, you know, I mean, it's okay, because you've got two opportunities to redeem yourself, Ren, because we can next talk about Casper, A Spirited Beginning, the 1997 direct-to-video fantasy comedy that followed. Don't worry, look, I'll read the production notes from Wiki to get your enthusiasm up.
Okay.
While Universal Studios planned their own sequel to 1995 film Casper for a tentative 1999 release, Harvey Entertainment, who owned the rights to the IP, shopped the property around, looking for other studios interested in producing products based on the character. Harvey eventually set up production of a direct-to-video prequel film with 20th Century Fox. After finishing work on Three Ninjas, High Noon at Mega Mountain, director Sean McNamara approached producer Mike Elliott about the directing job, and after showing Elliott Three Ninjas, McNamara was hired. Based on 5 reviews on reviewer aggregator Rotten Tomatoes, 0% of critics gave the film a positive review, with an average rating of 2.2 out of 10.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. To tell the listeners, this was a bit of a last minute one, because we were going to do Terrorvision, which we will still do, but we decided we needed a guest in the mix.
Well, I think I needed longer to emotionally and psychologically process Terrorvision. It was my basic feeling.
Yeah.
Which is one of those remarkable 80s films that literally seems to have been intended for no audience at all, ever.
Yeah, it's appropriate for no one.
It's literally appropriate for no one. It's astonishingly. But don't worry, Ren, because after Casper, A Spirited Beginning, we've got Casper Meets Wendy from 1998.
What?
Which is a cat. Yeah, it's a sequel to Casper, A Spirited Beginning.
Like Wendy from
Peter Pan.
Wendy from Peter Pan.
No. It's the good little witch named Wendy. Who is another comic book character from Harvey Comics.
Okay.
Yeah. there's also Hot Stuff, The Little Devil.
Oh, it does have Shelley Duvall in it, though.
Oh, no, no, oh, no, suddenly you are actually interested.
That would probably test my devotion to Shelley Duvall, to be honest.
Yeah. Anyway, after this, I went on YouTube and tried to kind of watch some of the original Casper cartoon, but I found it pretty charmless, to be honest. I think the original cellular Casper, as you said, is a bit cuter than CGI Casper.
Yeah. I think there's a little bit more of a charm to the 2D Casper.
A new Casper cartoon for kids in some kind of like ghost school or something.
Mm. Yeah, shall we finish by talking about that Who Framed Roger Rabbit thing you sent me? Because that was amazing.
I never know if we should do an episode on Who Framed Roger Rabbit, right? Because again, it's not really a kids' film. I definitely watched it as a kid and found it very scary.
I've never seen it.
Well, you can now see from... So I sent Ren a deleted clip from it. Do you want to describe...
Yeah, I'll put it in the show notes. But
what happened to Bob Hoskins in it?
What happened to Bob Hoskins in it is... is that he was going to have his head transformed into a pig head. Right, so, but it shows this clip of him kind of running out of this tunnel, and like, but they hadn't done the whole animation. So the first horror of this clip is that he's got this sort of horrendous kind of wire mother kind of contraption on his head that's like going to be like, if, you know, to the scaffold for the animation, and he's running around with this. which was frightening enough, but then he's a. He ends up going into the shower.
Yeah,
And the it was that the pig's head kind of runs off him in the shower, and it sort of melts and then like floods down the drain pipe, like eyeballs and all. It's just and there's like a talking head being like, yeah, this was the first scene we animated for the film, so we're quite disappointed.
Yeah, it was great. It was really satisfying.
I did enjoy that.
So even if you didn't enjoy the textures of Casper too much, at least you got to look at the texture of a dissolving pig's head going down the drain.
Pig's head, yeah.
Yeah.
I was wondering, is there any non-children's horror you've been enjoying lately?
Sorry, you cut out any...
Any nunchucks?
It sounded like you said... Oh, I thought you said any nunchucks, which I haven't been.
No.
What have I... I'm so busy, Ren. I mean, I played a little bit of video games. Like, I played Orwell. I finally got around to that, which is quite a good, you know, adventure, kind of visual novel with heavy-handed but decent 1984-style themes. I've been watching occasionally Only Murders in the Building with my mum, which is, you know, very light, but Steve Martin's obviously always a gem, especially, you know, when he's written something himself. He's good friends with Joyce Carol Oates as well. So that's partly why I like Steve Martin nowadays. not much. Have you then, Ren?
Well, I've got very into the Boulay Brothers' Dragula recently, which is a horror drag competition.
Oh, cool!
Which is streaming on Shudder.
Oh, nice!
So, the fifth season is currently airing, but I'm still catching up on the back seasons. But it's great if you're not for kids, but it's great if you enjoy the spooky and the creepy and the nasty and the costumes and performances and everything. It's very good.
I enjoyed the new Nicolas Cage film Dream Scenario, in which Nicolas Cage plays a man who appears in everyone's dreams, just like real life.
Yeah, just yeah. sorry. All right.
Right.
Well, I think that's probably yeah, do it for Casper.
Yeah, that'll do it for Casper. Let's do the credits.
Yeah, and we'll return with something where I've paid a little bit more attention to the source material.
Yeah. Oh, we probably should have mentioned quickly how Casper died, which is basically he was petulant about wanting to use a sled and went out sledging and was like, I want to play on my sledge and I want to come in. I love sledging. I'm a rich kid. and then he just died. From too much sledging.
Like, from the cold?
Just... No, I think he out-sledged himself. It was the exertion, to be honest.
Oh, okay. Yeah, all right. Well, that's there's a lesson then to the film. So, yeah, thank you for listening. Our theme tune is by Maki Yamazaki. Outro is by Joe Kelly. Our artwork's by Letty Wilson. If you enjoy the show, then please leave a review on Apple Podcasts or whatever. And you can email us at stillscaredpodcast@gmail.com. I think that's everything. Do you have a sign-off for us?
Well, yeah, just don't be like Casper. Creepy kids. Yeah. There are better ghost role models out there.
Yeah, it'd be creepy in the good way, not in the Casper way.
Yeah. Be creepy in the good way, not the Casper way. Okay. Bye.
Bye, creepy kids.